So what's going on with you? Welcome to the program. My name is Jim Rome. A very good Tuesday to all of you, no matter where you are. I am live. I'm in Southern California, right where I've been for the last year. Well, actually the last 3 years, but certainly this year.
Southern California.
Thank you, Alvy. I needed that backup. I need that documentation. I needed that proof. I really am. And if you don't believe me, take it from Big Voice Guy.
Live from Southern California.
There's no way we would ever say that. 1-800-636-8686. No way we'd ever say that if it were not true. It is very true. Everything I say is true. Not always right, but true. This program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Look at that graphic on CBS Sports Network. I love that. It lays out the guess, or it did. There I am, if you're watching our simulcast on TV. All right, so the show sets up like this. This is the epitome of a front load. What I mean by that, radio term, TV simulcast term. Three interviews, all in the first half of the program, starting with a good friend of the show. He is an MLB reporter for MLB Network and Fox Sports, John Morosi. The Dodgers looking to...
Hey, John.
Alvy, feeling pretty good about you, aren't you? Alvy beat me in this morning. That never happens. Hawk is the first one in every single morning. More often than not, I beat the old man Ritt in, but Ritt does beat me in sometimes. But we all beat Alvy in. I rolled in this morning, and Alvy was already there. And I said, dude, what's up? I just got some stuff I got to do. Oh, really? You always have stuff you have to do. You never get here before me. But he did. So he's on it. So John Morosi is coming up next segment. MLB reporter breaks down the World Series, and we'll find out whether or not this is the night the LA Dodgers clinch. But if so, they're going to have to do it with a bullpen game. Coming up in hour number two, a linebacker for the Saints, Alex Anzalone. Also in hour number two, a safety for the Green Bay Packers, Adrian Amos. Good news. The email is back. You can once again send emails to the program, Rome, R-O-M-E, at habitate.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at Jim Rome. Can I get a hip hip hooray for the email?
Hip, hip, hooray,
that was only down for about a week.
Hip, hip,
I love it. 1-800-636-8686. All right, then. Let's start with last night's matchup. Losing to the 49ers last Sunday the way that they did obviously left a very bad taste in the mouth of the Rams. Last night, they took that out on the Bears. Their defense was punishing. It was physical. The offense was efficient enough. And the final score, 24-10, was actually a lot closer than the actual game was. Now, you know, every single coach loves to talk about how a game is about all three phases: offense, defense, special teams. Well, punter Johnny Hecker put on a show last night. He pinned Chicago inside their own 10 five different times. Normally, if your punter is getting a game ball, that's a really bad sign. But last night was a really good sign for LA because Hecker controlled the entire game. Hell, Hecker himself probably could have beaten the Bears, because there was no way that Bears offense was driving 90 yards for a touchdown. Hell, as bad as their offense is, I'm surprised they even crossed midfield. Don't get me wrong. The Rams deserve a lot of respect for how they won last night. And the fact that they were mad about the way San Francisco beat them showed up last night, all night. Aaron Donald, as an example, was pissed about how that defense played in that game. And then the last night, the entire defense played like Aaron Donald was pissed at them. And then the offense found its rhythm as well. Let me hit you with a couple of quick highlights. There was the opening touchdown.
Goff gets the snap, drops back to throw to the far sideline, throws in the end zone, touchdown. Over the shoulder catch, Josh Reynolds on the far side of the end zone. 5 yards deep, 4 yard touchdown pass.
I don't need to say it, but I will. That's Westwood one. There was also Malcolm Brown's touchdown run.
Under center is Goff, receiver in motion, snap, spin, handoff. Brown bulldozing his way in over the right guard. Touchdown, Los Angeles. Malcolm Brown.
Macho. And Gerald Everett got into the action. He had a TD that ended the game in the third quarter.
Shotgun snap to Goff. Back to throw. It's left. It's complete. Gerald Everett shakes a tackle. Middle of the field. He goes in. Touchdown, Gerald Everett. Touchdown, LA. Rams have blown it open.
Touchdown, L.A. And notice where I did not play there. Any highlights from the Chicago Bears offense? I didn't play any because there weren't any. They went into last night 5-1. They went into last night as the most disrespected 5-1 team in NFL history. And that's because they were arguably the worst 5-1 team in NFL history. Like, you know that old beaten into the ground adage that you are what your record says you are? Yeah, well, not in the case of the Bears. Nobody outside that Bears locker room looked at that 5-1 mark and thought, yep, that's a 5-1 team, all right. That's a 5-1 team, and they should be mentioned right alongside the other one-loss teams, Green Bay, Baltimore, Seattle. No, I mean, everybody looked at that mark and thought, the hell they are, and how are these guys 5-1? And that only pissed the Bears off, and they were looking to make a statement now. They were looking to go on national television, and they were looking to prove a point because they heard all the heat that they were getting. They were looking to go on national TV and make a point, which is exactly what they did. Just not the point that they wanted to make. The point they made is that they can't score points. The point they made, they can't move the ball, they can't throw the ball, they can't run the ball, they can't do jack offensively. And you best not come in here and blame Nick Foles for that. I'm not saying that Nick Foles is awesome. But this guy can't do anything with Aaron Donald and the rest of the Rams pass rush up in his face every single time he drops back with Aaron Donald in his face. But it's not just a Foles thing. And it's not just a Rams thing. We've seen this movie time and time again. It doesn't matter who their quarterback is. If the quarterback is wearing a Bears jersey and Matt Nagy is the head coach, it's going to have the same exact ending. He's been the head coach for 40 games. In 24 of those games, the Bears offense has failed to score 21 points. And this guy is the alleged offensive mastermind. Yet he can't scheme his way to 3 touchdowns a game in more than half of his games. That is some Adam Gase offensive brilliance right there. In fact, this guy is the Midwestern version of Gase. He's Gase minus the crazy eyes. So no, it's not about the quarterback. It's not about Nick. And that's not to say that going back to Mitchell Trubisky is the answer, because if Mitchell Trubisky is the answer, I'd hate to know what the question is. Hell, Trubisky's never been the answer and never will be. But Bears fans, I hate to be the one to break this to you, but it doesn't matter who your quarterback is right now. Not when that guy is your head coach. Because the offense has been pretty much the same for the past 3 years. It has not gotten any better. That's why you get this play on 4th and short.
Flip it to Patterson. Left side, and he won't get there. What a play. Terrell Lewis.
There you go. Same old, same old. And the Bears defense outscored the Bears offense. That's right. The Bears defense outscored the Bears offense. But don't worry. Your head coach, Bears fan, is on the case.
The offense, we got to get stuff figured out. It's not good enough. And to be outscored by your defense, obviously, is unacceptable, too. So that part's frustrating. I don't ever remember in having our own defense score more than our offense. That's hard to do. So that part I don't like, and that bothers me.
Yeah, so my man is bothered. My man is concerned. You might even say he's troubled by all of this. So he's on it. I mean, he is really on it. Yeah, great. But can he fix it? Can he fix it? Because he hasn't yet. And then there was this moment from the broadcast last night.
We were talking to Nick Foles yesterday, and he said, you know, sometimes play calls come in, and I know that I don't have time to execute that play call. And, you know, I'm the one out here getting hit. Sometimes the guy calling the plays, Matt Nagy, he doesn't know how much time there is back here. And so that's something that they have to get worked out.
Uh-oh! If the quarterback is telling the coach that they do not have time to execute the play call, that's not good. That's not good at all. If the head coach can't see that, that's a major problem. Then after the game, Nicholas said that that's not what he meant.
That's not what I was trying to bring across in that conversation. We'll go through plays in different situations and go through a defense. And I'll be honest, like, hey, you know, right now, maybe get the ball out quicker. We were talking about game situations and Coach Nagy and I's conversations and our relationships. So, hey, maybe we don't have the time right now for this type of drop because of what they're bringing and the pressures they're bringing. So I think that's a valuable relationship I have with him.
Man, why don't you hit that word salad with a little vinaigrette? Hey, I don't know, maybe Brian Griese misunderstood what Foles was telling him. Or maybe he was saying something that he thought he said in confidence to a fellow QB. But it sure looks like that's exactly what's happening when the Bears have the ball. It sure looks like the game is being called by a guy watching a different game. A guy who either intentionally or unintentionally is looking to get his quarterback killed. Because last night, Foles was getting killed. It felt like every single time the Bears had a pass play drawn up, he'd drop back, he'd get swarmed, and then he'd just chuck the ball up as high as he could and hope that some receiver ran under it or found it. You know, and back to this notion that you are what your record says you are. Well, that means that at 5-2, the Bears are a Super Bowl contender, which is a joke. Even they themselves know that they're not. Then again, Nick Foles is trying to convince everybody that everything's fine. Nobody panic. We are all good.
Everything's in front of us. Season's not over.
Yeah, I guess. I guess it's not. I guess they are 5-2. I even guess that you could argue that they still have a shot at the postseason. Just don't tell me they've got a shot at winning anything that matters. Not with that offense. Not even with that defense. Because as good as that defense is, if it has to outscore the offense to win, ultimately they're going to gas out. They had a golden opportunity in prime time to prove a point last night, to prove everybody outside that locker room wrong. Instead, they proved all of us right. Because they're not what their record says they are, and they're not going anywhere at all. Not with that offense, not with that coach. That's who they really are, and that's how it's really going to be until they make some wholesale changes. And Foles is going to have to rally that team like they're the Dallas Cowboys. That's the quarterback of a 5-2 team saying, everything's in front of us. The season's not over. Yeah, I guess not technically. I guess not technically, but that's who they are. And they're not what their record says they are. And that's not going to change until they make wholesale changes. 1-800-636-8686. It's one of my favorite things ever in sports. When a team puts it out there like, oh man, we're going to make a statement. We have a statement. We got a little something for you all. We have a statement to make tonight. And then they go out and they make a statement. Except they proved us all right. Telephone number is toll free. You can find me also on Twitter at Jim Rome. And we have email. It is back. Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveittake.com. Good thing there was a Monday night game last night, or I would have led with the Cowboys, and the fact that the defensive coordinator dumped a bunch of Tabasco into his eye. That's a real thing. I mean, damn, Mike, what if it had been Cholula? I've got that story. Cincinnati Bengals, actually, given their situation at quarterback, have a lot to be optimistic about, confident about. They can feel empowered about their future. Except there's one vet there that wants out badly. Badly. Carlos Dunlap. It's an amazing story, which I will get to a little bit later on. I've got some more thoughts on Habib and that triangle choke that he put on Justin Gaethje. Come to find out, according to Habib's very good friend, Daniel Cormier, it was actually an act of empathy, compassion, mercy, that he could have ripped Gaethje's arm off, but chose not to because his parents were in attendance. Man, if that's true, that is an all-time MMA story. And by the way, not surprising, knowing Habib. He's all about family. He's all about honor. That would not surprise me at all. The thing that would surprise me is if he afforded Conor McGregor that kind of respect. And you know he wouldn't. Also, I mentioned briefly yesterday, I didn't get to it, but I will today. Mike Tyson is going to go through this fight with Roy Jones Jr. I wish they wouldn't. Honestly, nothing against either one of those guys, especially nothing against you, Mike. Mike, as far as I'm concerned, you can do whatever the hell you want. You're Mike. And you and I are good, even after you threatened to kill me once. I wish they wouldn't do that. But if they're going to do that, Mike has to have the right song to enter the ring too, even in an exhibition between a couple of 50-somethings. I'm here to help. So that's coming up as well.
You have a problem, turn off your station.
Let's see here. Canon essay. Front loading. I'm familiar with that. Signed, Thick Foles. Drew in West LA.
Thick Foles.
Nick Polis may have lost that game, but he won the contest in the locker room. Hey, Drew, maybe you get some spell check. You spelled Foles wrong. I'm sure there's something for that on your phone, or there's got to be something in Twitter settings that will correct your spelling errors. Where are you going with that, dude? I mean, dude, proofread. Don't send me tweets without going over them first. You spelled Foles wrong. That's hard to do. That's a really easy word to spell, even for you, Drew. Squirrel 2. Last night was the first time I came up short in any contest I've been in. Yours? T. Foles. What, like Ted? Anyway. Lane Kiffin doing Lane Kiffin things, which I love. When we come back. Oh, excuse me, my bad. Are the Dodgers going to finish things off this evening? We will get into that with John Morosi. There is no better place to get in on all the football action than with DraftKings, official daily fantasy partner of the NFL. Draft your lineup and feel the sweat like never before. Every single run, pass, and catch means more with DraftKings. It is very simple. You pick your lineup, you stay under the salary cap, and then you see how your team stacks up against the competition. Nothing adds to the excitement of watching the game quite like having a shot at millions in prizes. So if you've not signed up yet, what are you waiting for? Get in the game right now from your couch. Download the DraftKings Daily Fantasy app right now. Use the code ROME, R-O-M-E. And for a limited time only, new users can get a free shot at millions of dollars in prizes this week. Do not miss out on all this week's action. Enter the code ROME. Get a free shot at millions of bucks in prizes with your first deposit. Codename ROME, only at DraftKings. Make it rain. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Sunday, the NFL on CBS features a matchup of a couple of elite teams fighting for divisional supremacy. The Steelers go up against Baltimore. Going to be a great matchup right there. Also, you've got the Bills and the Patriots in a key AFC Eastern matchup. You can join JB and the fellas as they get you all set for the day's action on the NFL Today, starting at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific. Sunday, the NFL is on CBS, and I will be there for my views from Rome. Got my assignment, Drew Kalisky, as you know. Because I've mentioned this before and it's true. He is the most consistent human being I know. Drew hit me up, as he always does, the week of one of my appearances with my assignment first thing on Monday morning. So I'm already thinking about that. I've got my takes. Sometimes they change midweek. Sometimes they do not. So I'm fired up for that. Always excited to be on that program. So that's the NFL on CBS. That is Sunday at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific. And on those weeks where I do not appear, I am always front and center. Love that show. Love the guys. One of my favorite things in my career. All right, I've got John Morosi coming up momentarily. You've got Game 6 this evening. The Dodgers, as everybody knows, trying to wrap this thing for the first time since 1988. Are they going to get it done? John Morosi will be joining us. Also, you can find me on Twitter, at Jim Rome. And as I mentioned, our email had been down for a few days, but it's good to go now. Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. He is an MLB Network insider. He is an MLB.com columnist. He is a friend of the program. As a reminder, MLB Network's live coverage from Globe Life Field gets underway today, 3 p.m. Eastern, when John will be contributing to, and MLB Tonight will immediately air following the game, so it is a big day. He's got a lot to get done. He is John Morosi. John, welcome back. Always good to have you on, John. How are you?
Jim, always enjoy our conversations. Happy World Series to you, my friend. It's been a great one so far.
It has been tremendous. I would say the same thing to you, John. Listen, before we talk about Game 6, let me get you to go back, if you don't mind, to Game 4. You were on the steps right next to the Rays dugout for the end of that game. What was the reaction in the Rays dugout, and what was it like to watch it all play out right in front of you at the end of Game 4?
I'm never going to forget what I saw, Jim. It was one of the more remarkable sights in my entire career watching baseball, because Arozarena fell down between third base and home plate probably 45 feet in front of me. And so I remember the shock at seeing that, and then out of the corner of my eye, I saw the ball escape Will Smith at home plate and said, oh my gosh, they're still going to win. And you know, as a broadcaster, our next thought is, okay, where do I go and who do I interview and what do I ask them after witnessing that? So my mind was racing. I saw Brett Phillips running around center field as he was struggling to catch his breath. It was absolute chaos. And, you know, Jim, there have been a couple times during the course of this postseason where I have felt normal in the sense of the chaos of a postseason aftermath of a game where there's a lot of emotion and a lot of noise and a lot of excitement. One was when the Dodgers won the pennant, and then certainly Game 4 was in that category too, where the exhilaration and the ability to try to process what was happening and slow our thoughts down to be able to broadcast and put something cogent on the air, that those challenges, those emotions were all very familiar to me as a broadcaster having covered a lot of playoffs. So that was both exhilarating and remarkable, and also oddly centering as well, because it felt like postseason chaos, even though, Jim, I would tell you, my friend, we have never seen anything like what we saw at the end of Game 4.
Never seen anything like that. And what a great description by you, John. John Morosi joining us. So given how Game 4 ended for the Dodgers, John, how important was it for them to get out to an early lead in Game 5, courtesy of Mookie Betts and Corey Seager?
Well, that's a great point. And I was speaking yesterday with Adam Kolarica, a Dodger reliever, on the off day at the ballpark, and he made that point about how being able to bat first was actually really important for the Dodgers to have the chance to answer right away. And I think that was a tremendous 8-pitch at-bat to begin the game by Mookie, and 2 pitches later, Corey Seager had brought him around, and the Dodgers had a 1-0 lead, which, of course, they never relinquished. So I think in that sense, being the road team was really important, just as I think actually being the road team tonight works well for the Rays. Of course, they're facing elimination, and they've had an off day, and here comes their chance to answer. And I think we'll probably see a different Rays lineup tonight in terms of Yandy Diaz starting against a righty and Tony Gonsolin for the Dodgers. And so it's that same desperation. But I was so impressed by the way the Dodgers responded. They've got such a professional team, Jim. And Corey Seager, we talk as well about my love of hockey. And if there was a Conn Smythe Award for baseball, which would be the postseason MVP, not just the World Series MVP, I think right now Corey Seager would be the favorite on the Dodgers side with Randy Arozarena on the Rays side, because both have been tremendous. Both have been LCS MVPs, and both right now look like World Series MVPs in terms of their candidacy for that award as well.
You know, John, I'm glad you made that point about Seager, because I could not be more impressed with what he's done at the plate, in the field, on the bases. I mean, this guy's been absolutely amazing. And then you get, John, to Clayton Kershaw. Like, a lot of people not named Clayton Kershaw think a lot about how he pitches in the postseason. I'm kind of curious, what do you think that he makes of that rap that he has? Fair or not, what do you think that he makes of what he hears?
Well, he cares so much, Jim. And I think last year when the Dodgers lost to the Nationals in that first-round series, I remember distinctly Clayton's comments afterwards saying, everything that you want to say about me and the postseason right now is true. And he said that with a tone of resignation. He cares so deeply about this organization, about the game, his own professional obligation to it. He's never run from it. I also think he's to his credit, Jim, a couple things. Number one, he's now won 13 postseason games, which is the third most in the wild card era. So he's had some pretty great outings behind only Andy Pettit and Justin Verlander. So it's not as though he's 0-20. He's basically, I think, 13-12 now. And also, he's never, when he was asked about it earlier in this postseason, about the Astros in 2017 and how you look at his numbers and the one really bad World Series start that you would say that he had was against the Astros in 2017, when we now know they were cheating. And he's never said as an excuse, hey, that start should be taken out of my record, so to speak. There should be an asterisk on those numbers. He's never said that. When he was asked about it, in fact, a couple weeks ago, he basically said, hey, we're all about this World Series. We're not talking about what happened 3 years ago. We're trying to win the game in front of us now. So he's always been very, very classy. I'm sure as a competitor, there's got to be a level of satisfaction, Jim, that now he's started two games this World Series and won them both. That's a pretty strong demonstration. And it's been amazing how, for a long time, Jim, and you know this, he was the standard bearer of the organization. And now the load, I think, is carried a little bit more evenly among the pitching staff. And for a while, he was carrying the whole organization. And now he's had some teammates who have picked him up. And it's really actually a pretty compelling story.
I agree. John Morosi is joining us. And then, John, like Kershaw, you've got Dave Roberts, who has taken some heat in the past for the way he's managed in the postseason, and in particular, how he's managed Kershaw. Overall, what do you make of the job that he has done this season and in these playoffs?
Well, he's been excellent. And first of all, I'll make this point. In the middle of a pandemic, the Dodgers won had the highest winning percentage in a single season in franchise history, period. So that's a very hard thing to fault the manager for any reason when you have that as the backdrop, that you've had a better winning percentage in the history of a pretty storied organization. I think game four, you could have taken issue with the use of Pedro Baez. That was maybe the one puzzling decision that I saw there, sticking with him after it appeared that he had been told that he was going to come out of the game. There were a lot of other bullpen options there, so I didn't really understand that one fully. But then turn around, game five, Dustin May, trust him in a huge spot. A lot of great communication led into that. May is throwing 101 miles an hour and gets out of that inning. And then he trusts Victor Gonzalez, who had never pitched in the major leagues before this year, to get out Randy Arozarena in probably the biggest spot of the game. So I think for as much as there was criticism before, maybe saying that he was too loyal to Kenley Jansen, it was then Blake Treinen who closed out the game in Game 5. So that was, I think, while Game 4 was maybe not his finest hour, Game 5 was. And so I think you have to look at the overall body of work, tremendous job that he's done. And I think, too, Jim, we have to acknowledge the history here that Dave Roberts is now one win away from becoming the second African-American manager in baseball history to win the World Series, of course, joining the great Cito Gaston from the Blue Jays back in 1992 and 93. So Dave has always been very aware of that history. He's spoken about his role as a leader on and off the field and issues that transcend the game. And I think, as someone who's gotten to know him a lot over the years, I think Dave Roberts is a tremendous manager and a great representative of the game as well.
I agree with you. And Cito Gaston was great. Used to love having him on the show back in the day. John Morosi is joining us. So, John, what about the Rays? They've got their back to the wall, but generally, when they do, they come out fighting. How do you think they will show up tonight?
I think that they're going to have a tremendous performance tonight, and it's not going to surprise me at all. As much as the Dodgers are the favorites here, and they were my pick to win it in seven games when this thing started, and I'll probably stick with that. I have a feeling the Rays are going to find a way to win Game 6 and force a seventh game. I think that their at-bats will be very good tonight. I look for Kevin Cash. A couple things here. Number one, when you're facing elimination, you have to really do everything you can from a pitching standpoint and not let Blake Snell struggle at all. First sign of struggle, get him out of the game. I don't think he's going to struggle that much, but I think if he does, you're not afraid to pull him in the third or fourth inning. You've got a rested bullpen. The off day yesterday was huge, so you can probably go to Anderson and Fairbanks and Castillo for four-plus outs apiece. You've got a great lineup now, I think, of pitching to really support what you're trying to do there. So, and you could probably even use Ryan Yarbrough if you had to in this particular ballgame. So the pitching lines up well for them. I think we're going to see a different-looking lineup, maybe with a Mike Brasso involved there, Yandy Diaz from the right side as well. Maybe they end up sitting a struggling left-handed batter like a Joey Wendell or even a G-Man Choi. They're going to have to get creative. They have no choice. I think the at-bats by Arozarena have been tremendous. I look to Brandon Lau has had some big moments here in this World Series as well. I think, Jim, it may be kind of going against the grain here, but I believe they find a way to force a seventh game, and still think the Dodgers are the best team, still believe they're going to win the championship, but something about this year and this World Series makes me think we could see a seventh game.
You know, I tend to see it the same way, and John, I can't help but think, when you mentioned Cito Gaston, now I'm really flashing back, I've got images of Ed Sprague, Kelly Gruber dancing through my mind. Man, those were some great teams, weren't they?
They really were. The Blue Jays of those eras, you think about the number of Hall of Famers that were on those teams in like 92 and 93, Winfield, Molitor, Alomar, Morris. Of course, just what an amazing rotation they had there at different times there in Toronto. Just it was the place where superstars went to play. Devon White gliding across center field. What a tremendous player he always was. I always loved watching him play. And, of course, the great Joe Carter in the moment back in 1993. So I think in a similar way, you know, Cito Gaston was – I was asking Cito this morning. Actually, I spoke with him on the phone. And he talked about how, you know, the one difference is, of course, those Blue Jays teams had so many switch hitters and more switch hitters than, of course, the Dodgers, more of a sort of a strict platoon lineup, but similar in terms of finding a way to motivate and get the best out of a superstar-laden team. And so I think he really sees a lot of Dave Roberts and what he has done and really wanted to convey how proud he is of Dave Roberts and the job that he's done. So, and certainly the way that seeing Dave Roberts win potentially opens the door for even more African-American managers in the future, with some other great candidates being interviewed right now, like George Lombard, who's the Dodgers' first base coach, and Will Venable, who's the son of Max Venable, a great major league player. So it's a pretty cool storyline, really, to connect generations in that regard.
It's a great storyline. Such good stuff. MLB Network's live coverage from Globe Life Field gets underway today at 3 p.m. Eastern. Make note of that. John is going to contribute to, and also MLB Tonight, which is going to immediately air following Game 6. He is John Morosi. John, so great to have you back. I've enjoyed all of our conversations. Have a great evening, and I know we will do it again soon regardless.
Sounds great, Jim. Thanks for the call. Always enjoy whenever we catch up, and just you're the best in the business, my friend. Great job with the show, as always.
You too, John. Thanks so much. Appreciate that so much from you. John Morosi joining us, getting ready for Game 6. He said he's got a sense that there's going to be a Game 7. Do you trust the Dodgers on a bullpen night? Or are they going to get it done tonight? Hit me up, 1-800-636-8686. And yes, it is a front load. Got Alex Anzalone coming up next hour. I've got Adrian Amos coming up next hour. Your emails are back. Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. All right, so get up in here. Do you think the Dodgers finish tonight? Or are the Rays, with Blake Snell on the mound, going to...
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
I'm going to give you my thoughts on the Cowboys in a minute, but quickly, some reaction. Hey, Rome, I'm so happy to hear you have your email back, but I'm still waiting on you to get your Pony Express pickup back online. I just blasted the Bears with a wicked burn on my quill and parchment, and I want to get that thing over to you ASAP. Signed, Stu in Manhattan.
Burning.
Damn, Stu. Look at Stewie back in. Good to see you, Stuart. What's cracking? How you been? Hi, Jim. If Mitch Trubisky is the answer, I am the question. Regards, what causes Bears fans to throw their TV out the window on draft day? Ashley, Nebraska. Well done, Ash.
War Lady Clone.
She's in the top spot right now among Lady Clones. Ashley in Nebraska is the next big thing among Lady Clones. All right, you can find me on email, on Twitter, or on the phones. So the Cowboys now, they're having themselves a season, right? No, check that. The Cowboys are having themselves a year. Like, I know the passage of time has been really bizarre this year. Some things that are a week old feel like a year old. Other things that happened months ago feel like they happened a few minutes ago. But it really was just over 9 months ago that Jerry Jones hired Mike McCarthy, and they had that really bizarre presser. Remember that? When these guys were talking about things like having a sleepover. And Jerry was saying really weird things like this.
My sister explained to my dad one time when she was explaining why she wanted to divorce. And dad loved her husband, and he said, "What's gotten into you?" And she said, "I don't hear bells." He said, "Bells? I hadn't heard bells for the last 30 years. What's that got to do with it?" Well, the bottom line is that's a dad trying to advise his daughter on the right move. The bottom line is I heard belts.
And listen, I have no idea what Jerry's sister's divorce has to do with hiring a head coach or bells, but it's Jera. So you just get out of the way and you let Jera roll and let him roll right into this next gem.
You got a choice. You can get in that foxhole with somebody that hadn't been shot at, had never been in a foxhole. You can get in there with somebody that's been shot at, or you can get in there with somebody that's been shot at and hit and still going. Now, that's one I want in there with.
Another good one. And again, I have no idea what the hell he's talking about or where he's going with that. I never am. When that old guy starts bumping his old gums, nobody is. Because nobody else can understand Jera speak. It's like this guy's talking a different language altogether. But I think what he's saying is that Mike McCarthy has been hit and is bleeding out in a foxhole. So that's who he wants coaching his team. You know, some dude who's taken some serious shrapnel and is hemorrhaging. At least he didn't go with one of his whack circumcision analogies.
Circumcising the mosquito.
And it wasn't just Jera who's getting all weird with it. Mike had some of his own. And again, generally weird is good. Just not as it relates to Jera or Micah.
Jerry's telling a story about the purchase of the Dallas Cowboys. And at the end of the story, he leans over to me and he grabs me by the forearm and reaches out to shake my hand. He says, and you need to be the coach of the Dallas Cowboys. So I jumped up and hugged him, but and I'll stop right there. We had a hell of a time. Just say that. That's a moment. That's a moment. And that's a story I'll be telling the rest of my life.
Better to tell that story the rest of your life. As opposed to that story where Jerry said that he heard bells, so he hired you, only to fire you after one season, when Jerry realized that hiring you was one of the biggest mistakes he's made in his entire life, either in or out of the game. Especially after the two of you spent that entire presser saying weird things and making goo-goo eyes at each other. And yes, it is that bad. 9 months ago, these two were practically spooning at the presser. Today, the team is 2-5. They've been outscored 63-13 in their last two games. And sure, losing Dak Prescott was a major blow. And no, Jera really did not know what he had in Dak, or he would have given him that long-term contract already. And yes, the fact that Ezekiel Elliott puts it on the ground nearly every single game now is an issue. Andy Dalton getting knocked the hell out with a dirty shot was an issue. And so was the fact that not one teammate came to his defense. I'm not really sure why that is. Maybe they've already given up on the season. Maybe they felt like Dalton was playing like garbage before the KO. Maybe they thought, for who? For what? Who knows? This much I do know, they're a disaster right now offensively. But as every coach will point out, you need to take into consideration all three aspects of the game. Aspect number two, the defense. It's even worse than the offense. In fact, it might be the worst defense in the history of the Cowboys. They've allowed 243 points in seven games. That's more than they gave up in 11 entire seasons. And they've done that in less than half a season. It's that bad. They're on pace to give up 555 points this season. And that's not just bad, that's historically bad. So there were going to be questions for D coordinator Mike Nolan when he met with the media yesterday. One of the questions was about DeMarcus Lawrence. Roll the answer.
Obviously, the frustration for him as well is just, you know, look, when he misses them, nobody, whoops, excuse me, I got something in my eye. Just had some Tabasco on my finger and it went in my eye. That wasn't good. Oh.
Never good.
It's terrible. Jeez. I'm sorry.
Hang on, guys. I'll be right back.
Give me 1 second.
Wait, I'm sorry, what? That's the guy that you're counting on to turn your defense around. The dude who just dumped Tabasco into his own eye. I guess you could say that Mike Nolan is feeling the heat in two ways. Hey-o! He's on the hot seat, and he just gave himself a hot eye. Can you run that back one more time, Alvy?
Obviously, the frustration for him as well. It's just, you know, look, when he misses them, nobody, whoops, excuse me, I got something in my eye. Just had some Tabasco on my finger and it went in my eye. That wasn't good. Oh,
it's terrible.
Jeez, I'm sorry.
If by terrible you mean awesome, then it's terrible.
Give me 1 second.
How does that happen? How does an NFL defensive coordinator do that, let alone one for that team? How does he burn his own eyes in that situation? You want to talk about some terrible eye discipline? You see what I did there? Terrible eye discipline? Man, I'm so happy with that reference. Seriously, what if this guy had had some Cholula nearby? Think of how much worse that would have been if it had been Cholula, or even worse. What if we're talking about Frank's Red Hot? Then we're talking about Nolan rocking a glass eye. Let me tell you something, dude. What if my man reached for a bottle of Tapatio? Then we're talking about him going immediately blind. The players who told Jane Slater that the coaches are, quote, totally unprepared. They told her, totally unprepared. They don't teach. They don't have any sense of adjusting on the fly. They just aren't good at their jobs. End of quote. Man, I bet those players felt great about seeing their D coordinator go second grader by rubbing hot sauce in his eye. Forget being totally unprepared for football. That's totally unprepared for life. This guy can't scheme up a way to keep Tabasco out of his eyes, but he's going to scheme up a way to change your defense. Then again, how do we know that it wasn't actually a player who put that Tabasco in the first place? Can't you just see Lawrence or one of the other leaders on D saying, hey, Mike, you're just not seeing what we're seeing out there on the field. Let me help you out by dumping a bottle of Tabasco in your eyes. Is that better? Oh, you can't see anything at all now. Good. Yeah, don't let that freaking door hit your Tabasco guzzling ass. Oh, and by the way, Tabasco sauce is ass. And they should have never hired anybody who puts it on anything in the first place. Honestly. That should have been part of the interview. Hey, yo, do you like Tabasco? I love it. All right, thanks. Thanks for coming.
Just had some Tabasco on my finger and it went in my eye. That wasn't good.
Don't finish that thought. Only the Cowboys, man. Only Nolan, only the Cowboys. And it had to be Tabasco. It's a good thing it wasn't Tapatio, I'm telling you. Alex Anzalone coming up next hour. Open segment coming up next. Stay tuned.